Chapter 7. Veronica snatched the girls by the pajamas and pulled them into the tent.
"You're going to have a baby?" Sabrina cried. "I'm going to be a big sister, finally," Daphne crowed.
"Girls, let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is very early. All kinds of things could happen," Veronica said.
"She's right, girls," Nurse Spratt said. "The miracle of life is the most unpredictable magic there is, so we don't want you to get your hopes up just yet."
"You knew you were having a baby before you and Dad were kidnapped?" Sabrina asked.
Veronica nodded.
"I invited your father to meet me after work so I could tell him the good news. We met at the carousel in Central Park. Last thing I remember, my friend Oz was rushing down the hill toward us, and then we woke up in Ferryport Landing."
"Oz, if I could get my hands on him," Daphne said, stepping into her warrior stance. "He's not your friend at all."
"But you've been asleep for almost 2 years. Do you think something's wrong with the baby?" Sabrina asked her mother.
"We don't know," Nurse Spratt said. "I don't have a lot of experience with sleeping spells, but I know that being put under one is not the ideal way to grow a baby. All we can hope is that the baby slept as well. Most of the victims of these spells report that they didn't age a day while they slept. Briar Rose, God rest her soul, was asleep for 100 years, and she didn't age a day. But she was an ever after, of course."
Veronica nodded.
"Girls, this has to be our secret, okay? If something is wrong, I don't want your father to know. He's already blaming all the world's problems on ever afters. If he found out we lost our child because of one, he might do something rash.
Like fight a dozen hobgoblins at once," Sabrina said.
"Exactly," Veronica said with a sigh. "He's dead set on escaping this town. I don't need him dragging us through the woods again." "I won't say a word," Sabrina said.
"You can trust us," Daphne added.
Pretending to lock her lips with an imaginary key, she then tossed behind her shoulder.
"So, Mrs. Spratt," Veronica said, turning back to the nurse, "how can we find out if my baby is okay?"
"Well, unfortunately, I don't have all the fancy machines like the hospital, but I did manage to grab some essential supplies before the hand burned it down. I have a simple test that will tell us for sure. All I need is a blood sample."
Sabrina's mother rolled up her sleeve as Nurse Spratt prepared a needle. She wiped Veronica's arm with an alcohol-soaked cotton ball and pierced the vein at the crease of her arm. The crimson blood slowly filled the vial. When the nurse had what she needed, she removed the needle and applied a bandage to the wound.
"I'll have some news in 3 days, the nurse said, removing the vial of blood from the plunger and carefully labeling it with Veronica's name. "In the meantime, take it easy. Get some rest and stay off your feet. And let me know if you get a craving for pickles and ice cream."
Sabrina followed her mother and sister out of the medical tent. She felt like she had a million happy questions to ask, but also knew that her mother was nervous and didn't want to discuss the baby. Daphne was so happy she was skipping across the courtyard, but her silence told Sabrina she must have come to the same conclusion.
"Girls, come here," Veronica said, pulling Sabrina and Daphne close to her.
The three grim women hugged tightly.
"Mom, look," Daphne said.
Sabrina turned to see where her sister was pointing. There, lying next to the fresh grave of Briar Rose, was Uncle Jake. He was sleeping with one of the roses resting on his chest. Veronica frowned.
"He really loved her."
Sabrina nodded.
"The way you and Dad love each other."
Just then, Red Riding Hood came rushing out of Mr. Canis's cabin with the old man hobbling behind her. The little girl looked terrified and was sobbing uncontrollably.
"What's wrong?" Veronica said, swooping the girl into her arms.
"We've had a breakthrough," Mr. Canis said.
"He's everywhere," Red cried. "He can see us wherever we are."
"Who are you talking about?" Daphne asked.
"The Master. I remembered him."
"You know who he is?"
Sabrina asked, hopefully.
"No, just his eyes. I saw his eyes. They were everywhere I went, watching me."
Red buried her face into Veronica's shirt and sobbed. At that moment, there was a terrible explosion. Sabrina turned to find the newly built water tower on fire and in the process of toppling over. It slammed into the ground and cracked open like a cantaloupe, spilling hundreds of gallons of water into the courtyard. Everyone was swept away by the flood and dragged nearly to the other end of the fort before they regained control of themselves. Sabrina scampered to her feet and was about to help her family and friends do the same when she saw a figure dart away from the water tower. It was too dark to identify him, but she saw where he went. "I'll be right back," Daphne said, racing after the saboteur. "Daphne, no," Veronica cried, but the little girl ignored her. "I'll get her," Sabrina said, rushing into the shadows after her sister. The fort was not well lit, especially after the explosion, and for much of the chase, Sabrina was running in total darkness. She listened for Daphne's footsteps, racing around a corner at the far end of the wall, and then backtracked beside the medical tent and along the obstacle course. Sabrina lost her in the maze of equipment, but when she heard Daphne shouting, she turned toward the noise and ran. She found her sister standing before the high fort wall with her hands on her hips.
"Where is he?" Sabrina asked.
Daphne shrugged.
"He either went over the wall, which Sabrina could see was over 15 feet high, or through that hole."
Sabrina spotted a small opening at the base of the wall. A portion of the timber had broken. No one could have crawled through it, at least no one human. It was too small for even a child. Sabrina scowled. Whether the villain had flown out or shrunk himself, it didn't matter. He was gone.
Charming appeared to supervise the cleanup of the water tower and the mess it had left behind. A small handful of ever-afters came out of the tents to investigate, and Charming told them there had been a small accident and there was nothing to worry about. They seemed to believe his story and drifted back to their sleeping bags.
"What did you see, child?" Charming asked.
"He was small and fast," Daphne said. "I couldn't see him clearly in the darkness."
Charming frowned and walked away. Veronica led the girls back into the Hall of Wonders, where the rest of their family was still asleep. No one inside the mirror had heard the explosion. Veronica helped her daughters back into their sleeping bags, and after a quick lecture about the dangers of running after bad guys in the dark, she kissed them both on the forehead and wished the girls a good night. Wrapped in her sleeping bag, Sabrina dreamed of naked babies flying in and out of clouds. Their rosy cheeks beamed like tiny suns, and the sky was filled with giggles that transformed into tiny hearts and flowers. Sabrina had never cared much for babies before. They were smelly and always covered in food. But the idea of having another little brother or sister was exciting. It was a wonder she could sleep at all. Unfortunately, her lovely dreams were interrupted by a loud huffing sound and the sudden sensation of something moist and slippery rubbing against her cheek. Without opening her eyes, she made an educated guess about who was bothering her.
"Elvis, I'm sleeping. Go get Daphne to feed you," Sabrina grumbled and pulled her sleeping bag up over her head.
For a moment, she was sure the big dog was going to let her drift back to sleep, but with a sudden jerk, her pillow was yanked out from under her head, and her skull rattled against the cold marble floor. Pain rocketed from her temples around her head. Angry and aching, Sabrina sat up, spewing threats of trips to the dog pound, when she realized that the culprit behind her pillow's theft was not the Great Dane, but an enormous white stallion hovering 10 feet off the ground. Two powerful wings kept it aloft. Sabrina recognized it as one of the Pegasi the family had lent Charming's army. Behind it hovered a dozen more that looked like identical copies, aside from the fact that the one chewing on her pillow also had a rider. Sabrina snarled. Puck was sitting on its back, looking as if he was about to open his biggest Christmas present.
"What's the big idea?" Sabrina demanded. "I declared war on you, remember?" Puck said.
Sabrina rolled her eyes.
"Is this another one of your stupid pranks?" Puck sniffed.
You have contaminated me with your puberty virus, and you called my villainy into question. First of all, puberty isn't a virus, Sabrina said as she fought a tug of war with the Pegasus for her now rather damp pillow. Secondly, I'm sorry if I gave the itty-bitty baby the boo-boo face. Do you want me to give you a hug?
Puck curled his lip in anger.
Oh, now the baby is cranky. Perhaps we should put him down for a nap.
We'll see who's laughing soon enough, Puck said. You see these flying horses?
Duh.
These horses have a very special diet, Puck said. For the last 2 days, they have eaten nothing but chili dogs and prune juice.
Sabrina heard a rumble coming from Puck's horse. It was so loud, it drowned out the sound of its beating wings. Sabrina couldn't tell if the churn or the sound of the churn was worse for the Pegasus, but it whined a bit and its eyes bulged nervously.
Puck continued. Now, chili dogs and prune juice are a hard combination on a person's belly. It can keep a human being on the toilet for a week. Imagine what would happen if I fed chili dogs and prune juice to an 850-pound flying horse. Oh, wait a minute. You don't have to imagine it. I did feed chili dogs and prune juice to an 850-pound flying horse. In fact, I fed all of them the same thing.
Puck's Pegasus let out a tremendous fart and then whined uncomfortably. The horror of Puck's plan began to sink in, and Sabrina started to panic. As she looked up at the fleet of horses, she wondered what she could do to save herself. She decided a threat might be her best approach.
You'll regret this, fairy boy, Sabrina said.
It sounded hollow and pathetic, even to her. Sabrina heard a splat on the floor several yards away. She knew if she looked at it, she'd be sorry, so she averted her eyes. But there was no protection from the smell. It invaded Sabrina's nose like an unwanted house guest. She feared it might never go away. A second splat followed, and Sabrina scampered to her feet. Her only strategy, she realized, was to stay mobile. She leaped out of the way just before a third horrible brown bomb crashed near her foot. Sadly, she found herself directly below another Pegasus suffering a similar gastrointestinal crisis. She rolled out of the way and collided with her sister.
What's the big idea? Daphne groaned.
A second later, she was pinching her nose.
Geez, Sabrina, you should really lay off the beef stew in the mess tent tonight.
That's not me, she cried. We're under attack. Get up if you want to save yourself.
Daphne gaped for a second, unsure of what was happening, but when her sleeping bag suffered a direct hit, she cringed and dove to safety. In her efforts to escape the next attack, she knocked Sabrina down, and the two flailed like a couple of desperate fish in the bottom of a boat.
There's no escape! Puck shouted to the girls. And just so you know, I'm not taking any hostages.
He laughed so hard it echoed off the ceiling of the Hall of Wonders. Another bomb fell with a splat.
Is it on me?
Daphne cried, flipping her head back and forth. She calmed down when Sabrina assured her she had not caught any shrapnel. The commotion finally roused Granny Relda.
Puck! You cut this nonsense out advance, she demanded, her shouts waking Henry and Veronica.
Forget it, old lady! I'm done doing what I'm told! The Trickster King has returned!
He shouted, steering his horse so that it flew uncomfortably close to Granny Relda. A splat landed mere inches from her feet, and she gasped in horror. She turned to Sabrina and gave her an impatient look.
What did you say to him? She asked.
Sabrina was shocked.
Why is it always me?
Because you're the only one that can get under his skin, Granny said. You've obviously hurt his feelings. He's very sensitive.
Sensitive? This kid hasn't brushed his teeth since the Civil War, and suddenly he cares about someone's opinion? Sabrina asked.
Not someone's opinion, Daphne said. Yours.
Why does he care so much what Sabrina thinks? Henry asked suspiciously. Sabrina could feel her cheeks blush, and she looked to the floor.
"You've got your first boyfriend!"
Veronica exclaimed, clapping her hands happily. "Ugh," Henry complained. "I'm so not ready for this. Couldn't you have at least picked a boy who doesn't smell like a broken sump pump?"
"I didn't pick anyone, Dad. I don't like him," she cried.
Daphne grinned. "Whatever."
"Sabrina, apologize to him before this gets out of hand," Granny begged.
"Mom, this is already out of hand," Henry said, holding his sleeping bag over himself and his wife. Henry turned to Puck and shook a commanding finger at him. "Now you listen to me, boy. This is unacceptable behavior. You get off that Pegasus and come down here and start acting your age."
"Honey, he's over 4,000 years old," Veronica said, cowering under the sleeping bag.
"Well, then this is even more immature," Henry said.
Puck sailed over Sabrina's head.
"Hey, ugly! I want to thank you. You actually did me a favor."
"Oh, yeah?"
Sabrina said suspiciously.
"I've gotten too comfortable living in the old lady's house, eating the old lady's food, acting like a human. I am the Trickster King, the crown prince of snips and snails and puppy dog tails, the ruler of gremlins, rascals, and miscreants, the guiding light of every instigator, agitator, and knave from here to Wonderland. I shouldn't be living with a bunch of heroes like you and your family. I should be causing the chaos you are trying to prevent. I am, after all, a villain of the first rate."
"Fine, go be a villain. But don't you think this is all a little overdramatic? Flying horses? Poop bombs?"
"Actually, I think it's just dramatic enough," Puck said.
"Charge!"
There was little the Grimm clan could do. They ran about the Hall of Wonders like escapees from a mental hospital, shrieking and racing around in circles. Eventually, Mirror appeared, and despite his desperate cries and a very rich bribe, the boy and his chili dog-eating horses would not relent. Puck chased Sabrina until she tumbled over her own feet and fell. Helpless, she lay on the floor as the Pegasi drifted directly above her.
"Would saying I'm sorry make a difference?"
Sabrina asked.
"Not in the least," Puck crowed.
Like a lot of people who have experienced horrible, nightmarish events, Sabrina's brain blocked what happened next from her memory. She wouldn't remember being carried out to the fort, where dozens of soldiers, all safely far away, tossed bucket after bucket of soapy water on her until she was clean. She wouldn't remember how her family wrapped her in towels and carried her to a cot where an elf sprayed her with several cans of air freshener. She wouldn't remember how her mother sang to her and fed her soup, or that she slept for nearly 23 hours after the ordeal. It was good that she didn't remember, but those who witnessed it would be haunted by it for the rest of their lives. Daphne said she would never look at ponies, or chili dogs for that matter, the same way again. Unfortunately, that was not the end of Puck's pranks. By the time Sabrina had recovered, she found snakes in her sleeping bag, stinky cheese sewn into her socks, and the word "fathead" spray-painted on her jacket. Granny promised to have a talk with the boy, but Sabrina didn't have a lot of hope that his pranks would end. The old woman's efforts to discipline Puck in the past had been slightly less than successful. Sabrina had missed a day of training, and in that time the troops had become near experts on many of the magical items, including mounting the unicorns and riding the flying carpet. Mr. Borman and Mr. Swinehart had been busy too, designing and building a new water tower and various upgrades to the fort, including a trench around the perimeter, a new medical clinic, and two massive catapults, each loaded with boulders as big as a family car. But the two little pigs in disguise were most proud of the high-pressure water cannons they had attached to the watchtowers. Mr. Borman said they were the best weapons for fending off dragons if any happened to attack the fort. The biggest change, however, wasn't in the soldiers or the fort, but in the mood of its inhabitants. Gone were the frightened ever-after refugees resisting confrontation. They were replaced by an eager team of fighters, determined to be the best they could be. It seemed to Sabrina that they were all itching for a fight with the Master's Scarlet Hand army. With each hour, they became more of a real army, and the fort became an imposing structure. She should have been happy and proud of the community, but everything seemed eerily familiar to the camp she had visited in Ferryport Landing's dark future. There were things that were different. For example, Snow White was still alive, and Granny Relda hadn't taken over the military planning. Sabrina hoped the differences would be enough to change the town's destiny. The family sat down in the mess tent for a breakfast of oatmeal and wild berries, along with bread, eggs, and juice. Sabrina took her seat and glanced at the people around her. Her mother and father were there, as was Granny Relda. Uncle Jake sat on the other side of the table, picking at his food. Mr. Canis and Red sat together, though the little girl still looked haunted by her memories. Puck was nowhere in sight, which meant he couldn't ruin her breakfast with some disgusting noise or smell. She smiled and ate a big spoonful of oatmeal, only to feel something pop inside her mouth. She didn't think much of it until she noticed her mother staring at her in surprise.
What?
Sabrina, what are you eating? Sabrina looked back down at her food, but there was nothing unusual in the bowl. But when she looked at her hand, she noticed it had turned a murky shade of green.
Granny, is this one of your recipes?
Sabrina asked. The old woman shook her head.
Oh, Liebling, I think Puck has pulled in as a prank.
Sabrina ran into Charming's cabin and peeked into one of the two mirrors hanging on the wall. Then she shrieked. Her face, hands, feet, and even her ears were swampy green. Reggie's face appeared.
Girl, you look like you were attacked by a mob of broccoli.
Behind her, she heard Max. Let me see, he said from inside his mirror. Sabrina turned. Kids, Max said, as he shook his head disapprovingly. They jump on the latest fad no matter how ridiculous they look.
This isn't a fashion statement,
Sabrina cried, as she stomped back to the mess tent. She found Puck sitting in her seat, finishing her breakfast. He smirked when she entered.
Puck! What did you do to me? She asked.
Don't get all freaked out. It'll wear off by the time you start college, Puck said, stealing a handful of eggs from Red Riding Hood's plate.
Looks like he slipped you a water toady egg, Uncle Jake said. Relax, it's not harmful, and I have a remedy somewhere, but...
But what?
Well, the remedy has side effects, Uncle Jake explained.
What kind of side effects?
You'll grow a tail, he answered.
Gravy, Daphne said. Can I take it?
Before Sabrina could strangle Puck, Prince Charming stormed into the mess tent, demanding that someone do something about Goldilocks.
She's running around here, moving things.
The blonde beauty followed close behind.
Things are very out of balance in this fort. You can't have the catapult near the water tower. Water has a calming effect on people. You should put the catapult somewhere that people have their blood up, like the fire pit.
See, she talks nonsense.
It's feng shui. It's thousands of years old,
Goldilocks said.
And I would presume painfully annoying for every year, Charming shouted. This is a military complex. It's not supposed to flow harmoniously.
You asked me for my help, the blonde woman said stubbornly.
This is not what I had in mind, Goldilocks. I need fighters, especially ones with unique abilities. You can command an animal army, but instead you're moving the ammunition and the horses so they are one with the universe. Woman, we're launching an attack tonight.
Launching an attack? Henry cried as he leaped from his seat. What are you talking about? Charming looked Sabrina up and down. You are a strange child, he said. Then turned his attention back to Henry. The Merry Men only managed to track down one of the hobgoblins you let get away. That one has most assuredly returned to the Hand to report where we are located. We'll be under attack any day now. I have no intention of sitting and waiting for it to happen. We're going to strike first and let them know we mean business. It may be our only opportunity to surprise them. When Charming strolled off, Goldilocks sighed.
I'm just trying to be useful.
You have other talents, Henry reminded her. She walked away, frowning. When they were finished with breakfast, Uncle Jake retrieved the toady egg antidote and gave it to Sabrina. It was a little glass vial with a cork stopper. Inside was a strange yellow liquid. She stared at the bottle uncertainly.
A tail, huh?
Uncle Jake nodded. A really long one. Sabrina shook her head.
No way! I am not going to have a monkey tail.
It will disappear after a day or two, but without this antidote, you're going to be green for a very long time. Sabrina sighed. She wouldn't be able to hide green skin. She'd look like a blonde-haired crocodile. She could at least hide a tail. She took the top off the bottle and drank the liquid. It tasted like soda pop and cabbage.
How long before it takes effect? Sabrina asked.
Your skin is changing back to normal now. The tail, who knows? It could happen any minute, or it could take a couple days.
Henry shook his head in disgust. Magic, he muttered. There's always a side effect.
Sabrina knew if she sat and worried about when the tail might appear, she would go crazy. So she plunged into training to keep herself occupied. It was a busy day, as everyone prepared for the battle ahead. Each minute that ticked by caused tension to grow amongst the soldiers. Their eyes changed from those of eager students to those of an animal who knows the zookeeper is unlocking its cage. They were loud and full of bravado. Raucous versions of ancient Irish war songs filled the fortress. Whether their bravery was real or manufactured had yet to be seen. But beside the hunger for confrontation, many of the Everafters were going through a rather different phenomenon that surprised everyone who witnessed it. The Everafters couldn't help but be honest with one another. Maybe with so much on the line, people were giving their lives a second look. But the floodgates of truth swung open, and Everafters rushed about confessing their undying love for one another. Ms. White and Morgan Le Fay were nearly mobbed. Still, there were some that were panicked. Snow gathered them together and gave them a pep talk. Sabrina watched her speak and how the recruits reacted to her. Perhaps it was Ms. White's many years as a teacher, or perhaps she was just a natural leader. But she had a command over the crowd that amazed Sabrina. It was hard for Sabrina to believe this was the same woman who expressed so much self-doubt just days before. Snow told the troops that the battle would be dangerous, but it was well planned. She told them that people might be injured, but everyone was well trained. She told them that it was understood that fighting back was a tremendous risk, but that their names would be synonymous with the word hero, and they would be celebrated wherever Everafters lived, either in Ferryport Landing or beyond. Sabrina watched their nervous faces harden and their frightened eyes transform into fire. When Snow walked away, the group was demanding to be launched at the Scarlet Hand. They couldn't wait to fight.
She's impressive, a voice said behind Sabrina.
Prince Charming stood behind her, watching his former girlfriend.
You should tell her that yourself, Sabrina said.
Charming shook his head.
I don't want to encourage it. She could get hurt.
I want to keep her safe.
That's not what she needs from you, Sabrina said.
Bah! You're just a child, Charming snapped.
After a long moment, he spoke again.
Did she say something to you?
Sabrina nodded.
Yes, but I don't think she'd appreciate it if I repeated it to you. Let's just say that treating her like a china doll is not going to work.
Mr. Seven approached.
Are they assembled?
The prince asked the little man. Seven nodded.
Some are waiting in the Hall of Wonders, and the rest of the soldiers are moving there now.
Very good, my friend, Charming said, patting Mr. Seven on the back. I think tonight a few of us are going to become legends, you included. But know this, if you get killed out there, I'm going to fire you.
I don't work for you anymore,
Seven said through a smile.
Details, details. If you ever plan on working for me again, then you better stay alive. Understand?
Seven nodded and reached out his hand.
The two men shook respectfully. Then Mr. Seven raced away.
Have you noticed that despite everything we did to change the future, a lot of it is happening anyway?
She asked the prince. Charming nodded. And a lot sooner.
Maybe we can't avoid it.
Charming shook his head. I was in the future longer than you, child. I know what happens and when it happens. That gives us an advantage. Don't worry. Tomorrow is not set in stone. The troops gathered beneath the vaulted ceiling of the Hall of Wonders. Charming entered and joined Snow White, Robin Hood, and Mr. Canis at the front of the crowd. He called for everyone's attention, and the ever-afters grew still.
There has been a lot of talk about fighting against the Scarlet Hand. Now it is time to tell you how you're going to win.
Sabrina and her family watched from the back of the crowd. Mirror had joined them and seemed quite interested in the plan. It was explained in complicated detail, but when Charming was finished, Sabrina understood that the assault would be on the Ferryport Landing Marina. It sat on the very edge of town, only half a block from Sleeping Beauty's former coffee shop. Charming claimed that he had spies living outside of Ferryport Landing, and according to their reports, the Scarlet Hand was receiving shipments of supplies and magical weapons from Everafters sympathetic to the Master's plans. If the troops could destroy the dock, there would be no place for the supply ships to land, thus cutting off a valuable source of aid to the evil army. To accomplish this, Charming claimed the army needed a four-pronged attack. The first assault would be commanded by a new volunteer, Goldilocks. Sabrina was shocked to hear the woman had joined the effort and looked to her father. He seemed distressed, but said nothing. Since Goldilocks had the unique ability to speak with animals, she would direct a literal air force of non-English-speaking birds who would draw the fire of the Hand's guards. While the enemy was focusing on the birds, Robin Hood would launch a second assault with his trained archers, raining arrows down on any Scarlet Hand soldiers guarding the marina. After the first wave of arrows was launched, Mr. Seven would lead a team of Lilliputians and other small ever-afters down to the docks, where they would attach explosives to the marina right under the nose of the Hand.
"Then we drop the hammer," Prince Charming explained. "King Arthur's knights will storm the docks and run off the guards. Anyone foolish enough to stick around will face Camelot's swords and shields."
"And what do I do?" Snow said. She was visibly angry. "If you think you're going to prevent me from fighting so you can keep me safe, you better think again."
"Relax, Ms. White," Charming said. "You've got the best job of the whole attack. You get to push the plunger on the explosives."
Snow raised her eyebrows. "I get to blow everything up?"
Charming nodded.
"Oh," Snow smiled. "I'm a big fan of this plan."
"What about you, Canis?"
Puss in Boots asked the old man.
"What's your part in this plan?"
"My assistant and I will be fighting our own battle tonight," the old man replied.
From behind him stepped Red Riding Hood. He placed his wrinkled hand on her shoulder.
"Red has made tremendous progress. We have hopes that together we can reveal the identity of the Master."
Prince Charming gestured into the crowd.
"And now, Friar Tuck has offered to lead us in a prayer."
A bald, overweight man with a veiny nose stepped forward. He had kind eyes and a childlike face.
"Let us join hands and lower our heads."
Sabrina felt Daphne slip her hand into her own, and Mr. Borman's hand took the other. Geppetto held hands with the Scarecrow. Rip Van Winkle held hands with Jack Pumpkinhead. Beauty held hands with Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus. Though they all held their own beliefs and traditions, many entirely unique from all the others, they stood silently, hoping for the safety of themselves and others, for the success of their fight, and for the enlightenment of their enemies. Sabrina lowered her head and did the same. She hadn't been to church since her parents' abduction and wondered if anyone would still listen to her in heaven. But she closed her eyes and whispered her hopes anyway. That night, the troops put on whatever armor they possessed, picked up their shields and weapons, and filed through the massive gates of the fort. Sabrina and her family stood by, waving to everyone and wishing them the best of luck. So many familiar faces passed by with no guarantee they would ever return. Pinocchio watched as his father marched to war. Geppetto's uniform was too big, and he was having a difficult time with his bow and quiver, but he continued onward.
"Watch my boy, Relda," he said.
Granny nodded.
"Just until you get back, Geppetto."
"Farewell, Papa,"
Pinocchio said. Uncle Jake, dressed in his long jacket, trailed behind. When Granny spotted him with the other soldiers, she cried and begged him not to go. "I have to, Mom," Uncle Jake said.
"This is not your fight, Jake," Henry said, joining the argument.
Uncle Jake turned and pointed at Briar's grave.
"It is now."
A moment later, he and the troops were gone. Together, the family pushed the heavy doors closed and locked them the way the guards had shown them. Sabrina could still hear heavy boots marching and fading away.
"They're not ready," Sabrina whispered to her grandmother.
The old woman nodded sadly.
"No one is ever ready for war."
The waiting was excruciating. Sabrina couldn't sit still and walked about the fort aimlessly. She stopped by the new clinic and waved to Nurse Spratt, who was busy eating a pulled pork sandwich. Nurse Spratt was a nervous eater, and considering her already rotund shape, Sabrina was sure a legendary binge was going to take place that night. Hours passed, and the family huddled together in the mess tent. They said nothing to one another, but their worried eyes spoke loud and clear. Even Elvis was fidgety as he chomped at a fly that kept resting on his nose. After some time, Pinocchio approached, and his smiling face seemed to dissolve some of the tension. He carried a burlap sack slung over his back and seemed excited by its contents. Sabrina wondered how he could be so positive with his father off to war.
"I come bearing gifts," the little boy said, setting his sack on a table and untying the string that held it tight. "They're not much, but I hope you enjoy them."
He took out a marionette and handed it to Sabrina. She peered at it closely and smiled when she realized it looked just like her. The figure had blonde hair and blue eyes, and even had her little dimple on its right cheek. She marveled at its intricacies, all the way down to the dingy sneakers and her favorite blue shirt. The limbs clanked in her hands as the strings went this way and that.
"What are these for?" Daphne said, when Pinocchio handed her one that looked just like her.
"You have all been such wonderful friends to my dear father," the boy said. "I wanted to find some small token of thanks. I do say they managed to capture some of your qualities."
Granny Relda smiled as she looked down at her marionette, which wore a bright pink dress with a matching bonnet, complete with a sunflower painted in its center.
"I love it," she replied.
Pinocchio was elated and smiled his big, toothy grin. He reached into his sack and removed marionettes for Henry and Veronica. Pox featured his filthy green hoodie. There was even one for Elvis.
"It's nearly as good-looking as I am," Pox said, admiring his gift.
"Pinocchio, these are truly remarkable," Granny said.
"You must have worked so hard," Veronica added.
"One can be quite industrious when one has the right inspiration," the boy said.
"I don't know what to say," Henry said. He moved the strings, and his marionette did a funny little dance.
"If I knew we were giving presents, I would have gotten you something," Sabrina said, slightly embarrassed.
"Well, there is something you could do to return the favor," the boy said.
"Name it," Daphne said.
"I was hoping Sabrina might instruct me in the methods of the flying magic carpet. I find it most curious, but did not want to get in the way of the soldiers. Now that they are gone, I would be grateful for a lesson."
Sabrina nodded and looked at her marionette.
"For you, anything. You chose not to paint this thing green, so you've got a friend forever."
She flashed Puck an angry look. The Trickster King laughed at her and manipulated his marionette so it bent down and stuck its rump at her.
"Look at all these doors," Pinocchio cried, as he and Sabrina soared through the Hall of Wonders aboard Aladdin's carpet. "How many do you think there are?" I'm not sure, Sabrina said. My grandmother said there were hundreds, but she wasn't sure herself. What do you suppose is in all of them? Sabrina shrugged. For the most part, trouble. It must be fascinating to have the keys at your leisure, the boy said. I have to admit I'm quite envious of the freedoms and responsibilities your family has granted you. I have found myself held back at nearly every turn. It can be quite perplexing. Sabrina laughed. You've got one big vocabulary there. Pinocchio blushed. I've picked up a few words here and there. Sabrina could see she had embarrassed the boy, and she apologized. It was clear that he wanted to speak further, but he was so odd he made her uncomfortable. She decided to focus on the lesson and try to avoid any conversation. The boy was a good pupil. He took to the carpet very well, and within minutes he had reached a comfort and control that surpassed Sabrina's. It wasn't long before she realized there was nothing more she could teach him. He seemed to have sensed it too, and he returned to his angry rant. Being so young in appearance has been nothing short of frustrating, the boy said. You must be able to understand. Adults presume that since you look like a child, you have the interests of a child, or worse, need to be protected like one. Father forbade me from learning to operate this carpet. It was only after much begging that he agreed to let me take a ride with you. Well, adults are good at making rules, but I guess it's usually to keep kids safe, Sabrina said. Pinocchio scowled. Well, I am not exactly a child. I'm nearly 250 years old. At least my mind is. I have the interests of a full-grown man. I have a passion for art and music, culture and politics. Besides this stupid childish form, I am an adult in every way. The rug seemed to sense his anger, and it dipped and flipped, crashing to the ground and sending the children skidding across the floor. Aside from a bump on the head, Sabrina was uninjured. Pinocchio seemed fine as well. The carpet likes its driver to be calm, Sabrina explained. Pinocchio blushed again. I apologize. Sabrina shrugged. I get plenty mad sometimes. Don't worry about it. She crossed the hall to fetch the rug, which had slid against one of the many doors. This one was not unlike the one on the front of Granny's house. It was red with a stone set into the wood. The stone had a hand carved into it. On the floor below was a woven mat with the word Welcome. Once she had the rug in her hand, she looked at the brass plaque on the door to find out what was inside. But unlike all the other doors in the hall, there was nothing inscribed on it. That's odd, Sabrina said. What's odd? Pinocchio said. There's nothing to tell you what's in this room, Sabrina said, as she studied the door. And there's no hole for a key. Pinocchio didn't seem interested. Perhaps we should get back to the fort. Is it too much to ask that we walk? Sabrina rubbed the bump on her head gingerly. Sure. One step into the real world, and Sabrina's throat was filled with smoke. Pained cries of the wounded came from every direction. Dozens of ever-afters were being carried into the fort on stretchers. The soldiers had returned. What happened? She asked. But the soldiers were either too busy or too exhausted to explain. They rushed past her, jostling her amongst their ranks like a pinball. Close the gates! Charming shouted when everyone was inside. The guards quickly slammed the immense doors and braced them tightly with a bar as big as a tree. The prince commanded everyone to take a position around the fort wall in case the hand had followed them from the battle. What happened, William? Granny Relda asked, as soon as she could reach him. Charming scowled. They knew we were coming. They were ready, and they beat us badly. I have no idea how many are wounded or dead.
That can't be, Daphne cried. How could they know?
It can be, and it is, Uncle Jake said, his face full of disgust. Nottingham and his thugs were on us the second we arrived. They seemed to understand our whole strategy and countered it at every move. If I didn't know better, I would think Nottingham had been part of the planning.
Do you think the guy who's causing all the trouble inside the fort could be a spy, too? Sabrina asked.
Hush, child, Charming snapped. Nurse Sprat raced to the group.
"I can't handle all of these people," she said. "There's only one of me."
"I'll help," Granny said. "I worked for the Red Cross during the war. I can dress a wound as well as anyone."
"You can count on all of us," Veronica added.
The rest of the day, Sabrina and her family ran for medicine, helped bathe patients, and did whatever they could to make the suffering Everafters comfortable. There were 20 critically wounded people, and dozens more in need of stitches or a splint for a broken bone. Robin Hood's close friend, Will Scarlet, had been hurt badly. Little Boy Blue had 2 broken ribs. Sadly, a few of the Everafters died, while poor Nurse Sprat tried to save them, including Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus. The gingerbread witch had taken a blow to the head and had fallen into the river, and she was too far gone for Nurse Sprat's skills. The nurse wept, cursing the master and his scarlet hand.
"I'm not a trained doctor," she cried. "I can only do so much."
No one blamed her. They were grateful for what she could do, and at the end of the day, she managed to save the lives of 16 people. Exhausted, Sabrina and her family stumbled back to the Hall of Wonders. There they found 150 or so soldiers, all of whom looked beaten and afraid. Charming, Ms. White, Mr. Seven, and Mr. Canis looked over them like shepherds watching a flock. Mirror met the family when they arrived.
"I hear that things did not go well."
Uncle Jake nodded. "It's true."
"Charming has asked that we all meet. He says he has a new plan," Mirror replied.
"New plan," Henry exclaimed. "The last plan nearly got everyone killed."
"Relda, perhaps you can talk some sense into him," Mirror said. "The prince can't send these people into battle again. They're not soldiers. Does he think that a collection of princesses, talking animals, and elderly witches can beat back the master?"
"Shut up, Mirror," Uncle Jake said. The little man was dumbfounded.
"Jacob, we are in the middle of a war, Mirror. If you come in here talking about how it's hopeless, you are going to crush them. They know it went badly. Leave it at that," Jake said, then stormed off into the crowd.
Mirror shook his head, but didn't say any more. Standing in the front of the crowd, Charming raised his hand until he had everyone's attention.
"Tomorrow, we march on the sheriff's office."
A gasp went through the crowd.
"This is madness," Puss in Boots declared.
The Scarecrow joined in.
"My calculations tell me we have a 10% chance of surviving another confrontation with the Hand."
"That's suicide," Ichabod Crane shouted, nursing a wounded arm. "You saw what they did to us. We are no match for them."
Charming ignored their protests.
"The sheriff's office is a central planning base for the Hand. If we can destroy the office, we take a valuable asset from the enemy. My hope is that we can capture Nottingham as well. To accomplish this, I believe we need a 4-pronged attack."
"You and your 4-pronged attacks,"
Morgan Le Fay cried bitterly. Charming continued.
"The first attack comes from the Pied Piper, who will use his abilities to command rats and squirrels to infest the office, driving Nottingham and whoever else might be inside out into the open. We assume the offices will be filled with card soldiers. My spies have informed me the Jack of Spades and the 3 of Diamonds were seen going into the office this morning. Once they are in the street, the second attack comes from the sky. Buzzflower and Mallowbarb will lead a squadron of flying wizards and sorceresses over the crowd, zapping as many as they can with their magic wands. The third attack will commence with Goldilocks and the 3 Bears, along with an army of intelligent animals going after Nottingham. And finally, in our 4th prong, Mr. Seven will deliver the final blow by leading our knights, archers, and swordsmen into the fray."
"Charming, listen to reason," Beauty begged.
The poor woman was nearly in tears, and her little dog was yapping in panic.
"Are you determined to get us all killed?"
The prince's jaw stiffened, but he didn't get to respond. Snow White stepped forward, and there was fire in her eyes.
"Charming has told you the truth," she said. "You have 2 choices, fight or die under the heel of the master. That's it. There are no other alternatives. Now, I know you wish someone else could do it for you, but that's not going to happen either. So it's time to grow up. You people have received your orders. If I hear another one of you crybabies questioning them, I'm going to make you wish you had died at the marina.
The crowd grew quiet. The fort is not safe tonight, Snow continued. All of you will camp in the Hall of Wonders. Get some sleep. We march at dawn.